All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucksters? What the fuck is happening? What the fuck Turkey Day? What does that even mean? Why would I say that? Was that even necessary? Turkey, I don't even think I've ever used Turkey Day as a saying or as a way to describe Thanksgiving. It's Turkey Day. Who says that? It's like, this is going to be fun. Who says that? I don't say either of those things. All right, we're gonna eat the thing. It's Thanksgiving, and I'll cook, and I'll do, all right, okay. No, it'll be good. That's my version of, that sounds fun. No, it'll be good. It's gotten easier for me. It's actually going pretty well. I only got cranky for about 10 minutes. This is only day one. I've done a lot of the cooking already. You're going to be listening to this on Thursday. Today is Wednesday, and I've knocked out most of the meal. Because as some of you know who listen to the show, I do a lot of the cooking around here. We flew in, me and Sarah the painter, and we went to, we checked into the hotel. We went to my mother's house and said hello to her and went to dinner with her and John, John the jazz man. He's not really a jazz man. He's now 80 something. I think he's 80, maybe 81 he's going to be. My mom's getting up there. I can't say her age. 37, the last she told me was the age. 37, I think, is where we capped off. But I think she's older than that. That's all I'm going to say because she enjoys listening to the program. I don't need to hear about it. So we went out to dinner, had a fairly mediocre but large plate meal. I think that's the way it works down here in Florida, that it's not about quality. It's about what you can box up and take home and eat for 3 days. Not my mother, really, but I think for most people. Did I mention Annie Letterman is on the show today? Annie Letterman is here. I've known Annie a long time. She used to open for me occasionally, and I like her. She's kind of how do you describe Annie? She's got moxie. She's got edge. She's a little filthy. Is that not? But she's funny. Funny. So right when we got here Tuesday night, Whole Foods, snagged the Brussels sprouts, snagged all the stuff I needed. Now, those of you who are listening regularly heard my big plan for kabocha squash. That was the triangular sections rubbed with ghee and then sprinkled with garam masala and then roasted. Well, we got to Whole Foods, no kabocha squash. So I didn't freak out. I wasn't going to go on a journey looking for it. There was a real good chance that most people wouldn't give a shit either way that were eating it. But if they didn't have it at Whole Foods, it wasn't going to happen. So I decided to just get the yams, but then I decided not to do it the way that I was going to do it. I'm going to do it like the squash. So this is the predicament right now, and then we can talk about deeper things. Is that I cut up the yams in sections, and then I rubbed them. I just coated them with coconut oil and garam masala and salt, and then roasted them. But they don't have the same texture as squash. They get a little mushier, and I thought they would brown, almost fry up like. They did not. But they taste great and they look good. But I'm in a situation right now where I've got about less than 24 hours to decide whether or not I should just go ahead and mash them. Like I could serve them in the cubes that are mushy cubes because they're yams, or I could mash them and make them uniform and maybe garnish it with some shredded coconut or something. Still an exciting, provocative recipe, but now I'm just to mash or not to mash. That's where I'm at right now. And I don't know if you've ever been there, but it's not an easy place to be. All right, so let's get down to business. Let's get down to the emotional situation. Where are you at? What's going on? Now, I'm gonna talk directly to you. You know who you are. Okay, if you're listening to this, it's Thanksgiving. You're plugged in. Maybe you're even on your way. But this is crisis management right now. And I do this every year. But if you've pulled away to get your mind off things or pull yourself out of an emotionally precarious, tense situation with family, spouse, that's family, kids, still family, that neighbor that you don't like there, not quite family, but they call it family anyways, doesn't count. But my point is, do we need to take a walk? Is it time to take a walk? How cold is it outside? Did you come prepared? Do you have the right sweater? Is there a sweater upstairs that you have from when you were growing up that you could put on if you didn't bring a sweater because you don't live in a cold place anymore? Is there a hat available? What I'm saying is, if you're about to lose your mind, if you're about to unload on your uncle, your father, your mother, that neighbor, you could probably unload on the neighbor. You know what I mean? What do you really got to lose? So your parents will say, like, you really hurt Mrs. Johnson's feelings or Mr. Civics. Is that a weird last name? How about Mr. Spendowski's feelings when you unloaded on him because of his wrong-minded political views? You can live with that. With the parents or the sisters and brothers, I don't know. That stuff can reverberate for months, maybe years. So before you do that, take a walk. Let's go outside, get a breath of fresh air. Let's think it over. Because honestly, my mother's boyfriend, John, he's a nice guy, and I guess, and I like him. He's, you know, he's one of those people, he talks a lot, he tells stories, and you know, it could seem like, wow, I've heard this story. This is the ninth time I've heard this story. I don't think he's listening to as much music as he used to, which is odd. I think that he should, because it kept him, it kept his mind occupied. My point is that I will probably snap at him at least once, one good one before I leave. And my mother, I think I mildly snapped at her, but then it became clear to me, because Sarah the painter said that we're both similar, that maybe that's just the way we communicate emotionally sometimes. But I'm saying that you might not be at that point. You might be in a crisis situation. Here's a couple other things I want you to remember. They're old. They're old people. Now, maybe you're not as old as me, but maybe they're just older people. But when they get old, they're not going to change. Nothing you're going to say is going to change them. What you're going to do really is just distract them from the thing that's never going to change and make them upset with you, either angry or hurt. And then you've accomplished nothing other than set yourself up for an apology of some sort in the near or distant future. So if you're taking a walk now, it's the right thing to do. See, breathe it in. Remember, you grew up here. Remember, your wife grew up here. Remember, this is where your parents live now. Remember when you were a kid and everything was okay? That shit's over. Oh, sorry, that shouldn't have been part of the guided meditation. I apologize. I apologize. I'm not even getting laughs from my girlfriend anymore. If there's one fucking person, oh, she's in the room. Oh, the towel's here? Hey, you guys, something real is happening. The towels are here. How many?
A lot.
I get laughs, but you're also working? Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. How many towels? That's a lot of towels. What, you kissing me? You can do that on the mic. Wasn't that a nice moment? The house cleaning staff brought towels. We had a small discussion about why she wasn't laughing. And she made me feel that she did laugh occasionally at me. And we had a kiss. That's what's happening the day before Thanksgiving right now. Looking at the ocean. Tomorrow, we're in the shit, people. We're in the shit. All right? It's all happening. But here's what happened the other day. We're staying at this hotel. And we go down for breakfast. We get to the lobby and there's a fucking fire alarm going on, like loud. There's that flashing light. There's something being said like, yeah, please leave the building. But it's like the entire fucking lobby. So right when we get off the elevator, the security guy's like, don't worry, don't worry. It's a test. Don't worry. Everything's okay. And that was enough. Right? He was wearing a uniform. Okay, we'll believe you. Guy with a uniform, security guy. But then we go into breakfast thinking that it might not last that long. And we're seated and we order food. And it's like, meow, meh, meh, meh. I'm not even sure what the sound was, but that was annoying enough to give you the idea of it. Flashing light, flashing light, flashing light, flashing light. And everybody is sitting there just eating their fucking breakfast. Families of people just, you know, pass me the waffle. Is that syrup? You want to taste this? Kids, just nobody is even registering it. And it is loud. It is oppressive. It is menacing. But everyone, because they were told it was okay, is just sitting there in this chaotic alarm situation. Except for me, I was like, what the fuck? How long is this going to go on for? Now, I'm not saying I'm better than other people, but I, at some point I was like, why are we tolerating this? But that's not the analogy or metaphor I'm trying to illustrate. I just thought it was a fitting metaphor for where we're at globally and culturally. Just people, families of all kinds sitting there eating as if nothing's happening. And there's a fucking fire alarm, loud as shit, just wailing. And everyone's sort of like, this is good. Do you like your pancakes? Meh, 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 meh. Are we going to the beach today? Meh, 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 meh. And I kind of realize I kind of feel that way all the time. Because I look at the news a lot and I see the rising waters. So that was the experience I had. To me, it was like, all you need is one guy with a little bit of authority to tell you there's nothing to worry about. And you'll sit through the alarm. You'll sit through all of them and you'll enjoy your waffle. So Annie Letterman is here. She wrote on the last Sacha Baron Cohen show and she's been doing stand up a long time. And I think I met her in, where did I meet her? I think I met her in New York and she opened for me in Philly. I know that. And she's unique and she's funny. And this is her and I talking back at the garage. I'm trying to think when I met you, and I know that I asked you to middle for me in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
But like, where did I meet you first?
We went to a meeting together.
Oh.
We went to a meeting at in Silver Lake, I think.
Really? Out here?
Yeah. And you were like, it's at 8 a.m. And I was like, are you seriously going to fucking make me get up at 8 a.m., you piece of shit?
Yeah.
This fucking asshole.
And you did it. And I that didn't stick though, huh?
I did my 90-90. I quit drinking in 2009.
Yeah.
January 28th. And then,
yeah.
And I did my 90-90. So I went once a day for 90 days.
Right.
And then I really started to not, I don't know. I didn't want to talk about drinking all the time. And I didn't want to, I quit drinking after my first open mic. So I was like really kind of wanting to put as much energy into stand up as I could.
You were just starting out then?
In 2009, yeah.
But you were a New York comic.
Uh-huh.
Right? And you had just moved out here?
Yeah.
But were you out here permanently or it was?
I ended up going back and forth, but I was out here for...
I didn't know you in New York. I knew you because you used to hang with some pretty dirty guys.
Who, like Norton and stuff?
Yeah. Like, that's how I knew you. You're like one of the women that could run with that mess of people.
Yeah, it was fun. I loved going on the road with Jim. That was great. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. You opened for Jim.
Mm-hmm. I opened for Jim for a little while. That was like my...
That was your training?
Well, yeah, it definitely trained me in some shit. I mean, I remember the first time I opened for him was in... Caroline's hit me up and I had done like their Caroline's Funniest or whatever.
Right.
Where like do 1 minute of material.
Yeah.
So horrible. I mean, to do 1 minute of material, I couldn't even imagine.
It's the worst.
And so Caroline's had me, and I guess he wanted a female opener to kind of balance him. But I remember him saying to me, he's like, what I like about you, Annie, is you're like me and the fact that you'll tattletale on yourself. Like, it's like constant like self-confession, I guess. But it's just like, sometimes I'm like, Annie, shut the fuck up. Like, let people draw their own. Don't tell everyone what's wrong with you immediately.
But I can't like, so those were your first big paying gigs were working, opening for Jim?
Yeah. And then I did.
But that audience, I mean, that audience is like, I would imagine, you know, mostly men, you know, filthy men.
Yeah.
But shamelessly filthy and kind of sweet.
Yeah. I mean, so the way I got the gig, I remember I was at a coffee shop and I'll never forget it. And I was, I got the text.
Yeah.
Or the call or something about opening for him.
From and a manager?
Yeah, and I had never met Jim before, so I was like so excited. I was just a fan of his.
He saw you somewhere?
He was like, who are the newer female comedians or whatever?
Oh, okay.
Or whoever, who are the openers? I remember like I was leaving a coffee shop and I just got really confident. I kind of just sharted. I sharted a little. I
for
fucking
real?
Yeah, I swear to God, I fucking shit my pants a little. I just told Jim that story recently.
You told Jim like when you heard that you
got it? Was like excited. I was like, oh my God.
So you like you, I thought that was just a saying. Like,
no, I shit my pants. I
was
farted.
So excited, I shit my pants and
yeah,
you did
I shit
it.
My pants. Well, shitting your pants you know is happening, so it's different. I always feel like it's
so it was a
shard
mistake.
Is such a more of a betrayal because you really trusted yourself for
sure.
a sec.
Yeah. But you sometimes you're sort of like, is it it's not full trust.
Yeah.
But I took the leap of faith.
I said, it's a good day today. It was like birds were chirping in Brooklyn. I was like so excited. I'm leaving this coffee shop. And then I remember I called my dad and I was like, I just shit my pants. And
just for that you called him?
I wanted to talk about the gym thing. And then I also wanted to tell him about
that you shit
in my pants.
How did he respond?
He got mad at me and hung up because when I called him back, I was like, why? What's going on? And he was like, I'm sick of your mother's pranks. I'm like, what are you talking about mom for? My mom had shit her pants at the exact same time, like moments before.
So Is this a real story?
I swear to God. So my dad thought that we were like pranking him, but really we had just like shit each other's pants.
But did you call your mother and say like, can you believe that happened to us at the same time?
Yeah, but hers was like she realized she shit her pants when she was doing her laundry. Like,
oh,
which
weird.
Is grosser.
Right. She didn't know that she...
Like she hadn't noticed.
Oh, so she didn't, it wasn't a timing thing.
So it wasn't maybe
thing.
Exactly the same time, but right. She had just realized it at the same moment that I said that to my dad.
Oh, well, that's exciting.
So my dad thought we were pranking him. Yeah, it was great. It was fun.
But opening for Jim, I mean, I have to, how was it? Because that's a hell of a baptism into it. That's a big crowd of a certain type. And I'm not being condescending. I mean, I like those guys. I like Jim. Yeah. But I can't imagine like the requirements for his audience have to be some pretty high level of filth and self-actualization.
It was the first time I opened for him was very, I was scared of them. You know, like I went out really fearful and I didn't have a good set. And then they ended up switching me to the host, which is so humiliating.
Well, yeah, the fear thing will fuck you every time.
Right. I can't go afraid of them. But that taught me a very valuable lesson because then I came out swinging the next time like,
fuck
they
you.
Might have like fuck all you guys like
yeah,
whatever
right.
like
oh yeah so
because
that was
the
it.
Duke lacrosse this was like before I think that was found not true but it was like I'm like right. What do you guys play like? You know just like you know
you gave it to him
yeah I was like I'll show you
yeah that's good though
and,
it's a good tool to have
but when I first got in the first spots I got were actually from Donnell Rollins because
Donnell yeah
I had met Donnell in New York
I just saw him the other
he's
day
he's the best he's so fun
he's a sweet guy too like he just was started talking about something about his dad like out of nowhere I got him in the middle of some heavy thought about his father the other night and he just laid it on me and
yeah.
It was kind of sweet
yeah he's like a really sweet he's a
deep
sweet
guy.
Yeah he's awesome
yeah
but so when I met him I had wanted to do comedy I was living in New Mexico we have that in common
I know
I was
God,
living in
did
Santa
I know
Fe.
That
I don't know I went to the College of Santa Fe, which is dearly departed.
Oh, it's not St. John's, the College
no.
of Santa
Fe. St. John's, they make you read.
Right.
College of Santa Fe, they went out of business.
All right, we'll get back to that. Yeah. So Donnell, he gave you your first...
So Donnell, I knew this guy from Santa Fe, my friend Paul Shin, who was friends with Esther Koo. They just had gone to college together. Or
Esther Koo, the comedian?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then so when I had said that I wanted to do comedy, I'd moved to New York to do comedy.
Yeah.
My friend Paul was like, you should meet my friend Esther. And then Esther was like, you should come to this party at my friend Donnell's house. And I'm like, Ashy Larry, that's awesome. So then I go to the party and I'm talking to his friend. I can't remember his friend's name.
Who, Donnell's?
Yeah, Donnell had this friend who I was talking to. And he was like, oh, you're funny. Are you a comedian? And I was like, well, actually, I got all nervous. I was like, I don't know. I want to do it. But And he was like, yo, Donnell, she wants to do comedy. And I was like, in front of everyone. I was so embarrassed. And Donnell was like, I got a show on Monday. Come do it. And I was like, well, I'm not really ready. I think I'd done maybe one open mic.
Right.
I quit drinking like the week before.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know if I'm ready. And he humiliated. I mean, he's like, dude, don't say you want to do something and not do it. He's like, everyone's got to do it. I'm so grateful for it. But he was like, go hard or go home. And I was so embarrassed. So what I did was I showed up that Monday. And he ended up being like, we'll just come next week. And then I came the next week and I brought people and stuff. And
He wanted to test you first? And that you?
Well, he was like, don't like... He really went hard. He really he yelled at me.
But when you showed up, you didn't go on?
I showed up at that show, no, he didn't have me go on.
And what'd you have, like 5 minutes, five jokes?
I mean,
jokes?
Probably, yeah.
What were you, like 19?
I was 25.
25?
It was my birthday yesterday, I'm 35.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you.
But you were just out of college at 25?
Well, sort of. I just quit drinking. So I was like, you know, I went to college for about 8 years. I went to undergrad for a long time because I was drinking so much. It was like kind of.
8 years?
Yeah.
That's really long.
Well, I was like, you know, it was incomplete. So I wasn't like.
All right.
You know, so I was like, you know, I would take like a semester off or whatever to, you know,
but
pay more attention to Jaeger.
Oh, Jaeger was the thing?
I quit Jaeger first.
Jaeger, that leads to some bad shit
yes,
in my
it does.
Experience.
Yes, it
for
does.
Some reason, that particular liquor mm-hmm. does it opens you up.
Yeah, I used to drink. I used to drink it by the pint. They had like I was dating this bartender. Well, dating whatever, banging this bartender in New Mexico, and they had a Jaeger machine. He would just give me pints of Jaeger. I would just wake up with just like, you know, my knees were all torn out because I would fall down drunk. So embarrassing.
Well, that's better than like lining up dicks.
Yeah, I guess. What, like a Plinko chip? Boing.
So you opened for me, middle for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Philly.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And I think we were driving around your mom's car.
My mom had an eBay drop-off store.
That's right.
And she had a van that had a wrap on it that said, like, we'll sell your stuff on eBay in primary eBay colors.
Why were we driving around in that? Did you drive down from the city?
I was living in New York, yeah.
But where was her store?
Her store was out of her house.
In Philly?
Yeah, in the suburbs of Philly.
Oh, so you were staying at your mom's.
Yeah.
And we're driving around.
We're driving around. I was so pissed I didn't get a picture of that. That's so funny.
Yeah. Did we get sandwiches?
We got sandwiches and we went to the art museum.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
We did some cultured stuff.
Yeah, it was good. I remember texting you like, I think that was really fun. And then you were trying to ghost me.
Oh, I was?
Yeah,
I don't
a week
think
later.
So.
You were being a little.
Really?
And I went, you can't be cold to the cold.
Yeah.
I'm too much like you, Mark. You're not going to get rid of me.
Was I nice to you?
Yes, you were.
Oh, well, that's good. So, but where did you grow up?
I grew up in the suburbs of Philadelphia.
And so you are from Philly, mm-hmm. so that she was there.
Mm-hmm.
And what, you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have a twin brother and I have an older brother.
Twin brother. What'd that guy end up doing?
He works in sports TV. He's in Boston and he's a producer at NBC Sports, New England.
A suburb of Philly. I think Philly's a rough place.
How so?
I don't know. I talk to people from there and they have a definite edge to them.
Yeah.
They're cool. Yeah, I know. You're kind of like that. Like you can't really fuck with them.
No, I mean, I don't know where I got my confidence. I mean, well, I don't know.
You're seeing Kurt Metzger now. He's Philly, right?
He's from Toms River, New Jersey, but he started comedy.
It's close.
He did comedy in Philly.
Right. Him and Jay.
Yeah.
Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
That Philly crew.
Yeah.
Joe DeRosa.
Yeah, DeRosa. I talked to him today.
You did?
Yeah.
He's a sweet guy.
He's the best.
He's a little soft for Philly.
He is soft for Philly, but he's got he's got it in him to do it.
Oh, no, definitely. Yeah. No, he's definitely Philly, but he's sort of a softer Philly.
He's like Norristown, I think.
Oh, is that what it is?
I don't know.
So you're like, what, were your parents together?
Yeah, my parents were together. My dad worked at Penn.
He did?
Yeah.
As a teacher?
He was the treasurer.
The treasurer of Penn.
And then my mom had a bunch of-
So that's a good job. So you had you could use the pool over there and stuff?
No, we never went. I never went. I would go to work with him sometimes, but I never really used the facilities. He retired when I was- 15. My dad's 77. He retired when I was 15.
Uh-huh.
And so...
And what'd your mom do?
My mom did different jobs. She worked at, when I was a little kid, she worked at this organization called Gray Panthers. It was an organization for...
Yeah, old people.
Against, ageism and stuff, which maybe you care about now.
Uh-huh.
Probably not the time.
Okay, yeah, I can take
You look great. You look great.
That's
look
very
great.
Nice. So
but you look
you.
Good, so
that's
important.
That's all right, so do you. The makeup's working for you.
Yeah.
So,
I put so much on.
I know. I'm surprised.
Bonnie was like, I talked to Bonnie McFarlane today. I was like, I'm going to go do mine. She's like, what are you going to wear? It's so funny.
You smoking weed?
So yeah, I smoke weed.
No,
I didn't
still
smoke
no
today
drinking?
Or anything. No drinking.
Just a weed.
Just weed, and I go in and out of being completely sober and then smoking weed or whatever, and I've done hallucinogens and stuff pretty recently.
Did that help out? Did it help?
Yeah.
Did you do them for clinical reasons or for fun?
For sure.
Which one?
I did mushrooms, acid, and DMT in the past couple of years.
Uh-huh. And these were experiments or
yeah.
It wasn't party time? It was sort of like...
No, never party time.
No?
My life is a party. I have fun at the DMV, you know?
Uh-huh. But yeah, but well, let's go back to when did you start...
I can tell you all of those.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
But what happened? How were you so fucked up that you needed to get sober when you were in your early 20s? When you were a kid, what was going on? Where'd you go to school? What was the deal?
I went to a Quaker school called Green Street Friends School.
That's just
Germantown Friends.
Oh, but that was because it was a good school.
Yeah, my mom, one of the jobs that she did, she wrote the newsletter for the school, so she really liked the idea of Quakerism, and she decided to raise me and my brothers Quaker.
Just because she liked the idea?
Yeah, well, we didn't have she wasn't brought up very religious at all, and my dad wasn't very religious. He was in Vietnam, and I think he found God, but I've never really had that conversation with him.
And he's still around?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. So your dad was, what religion were they?
My dad, they both were brought up nothing, dad's father wasn't in the picture really, but he was Jewish, but they never celebrated, and then they celebrated Christmas, and my grandmother was Christian,
huh?
And then we thought for a while she was Jewish, and she was adopted. So there's like a lot of adoption in the thing.
Have you done the genetic thing?
Yeah, 20% Jewish.
And what's the rest?
The rest is boring. It's like British or something. We're like from England. I thought I was Russian because people literally come speaking Russian to me in distress. Like
I could see you looking Russian-ish.
They come like I'm like going to save them or something.
Really?
I fucking don't.
Just on the street?
In Philly a lot.
Russians would come up to you.
Like, I swear to God.
Panic in their face. Help me. They're not understanding.
Like you're the only one that will know. But also when I was in, I used to live in Greenpoint in Brooklyn and everyone's Polish. So,
yeah, so you got
if
that.
I was in a bad mood, they just started speaking Polish to me.
Right.
They're like, if you're frowning, you're definitely.
You do look. A little, I can see that happening. But your dad was in Vietnam, like for like the real deal, kind of like
he was. He didn't have to like shoot his gun or anything. He was a he was a mechanic, a plane mechanic. My dad went to school for engineering, and then he ended up going to Wharton. My dad's like really smart, but ADD and crazy, you know, like
right. But your mom like just decided Quakerism.
Yeah, and Quakerism's really cool. I'm glad it gave me a good...
Would you consider yourself like a Quaker?
Sure. I mean, I went after the election, I was kind of like going to Quaker meeting again for a little bit.
The last election?
Yeah.
Really? You were going to Quaker meeting?
Yeah, I started going back. Yeah. Well, it's on Sundays, you just go and you sit in a room on these benches facing each other.
Yeah.
And you just sit in silence. And the whole theory is like if you feel moved to speak, like...
Yeah.
God speaking through you, but it's people just stand up and say kind of whatever they feel moved
that's,
to say.
That's a ritual of Quakerism?
Yeah, that's the
Quaker
church.
Meeting? That's the church?
But there's two different, there's programmed and unprogrammed Quakers. So programmed Quakers make up the majority of it, but not in the area I'm from. So
programmed?
In the tri-state, programmed is they have a preacher and stuff. And they go by the Bible and stuff. So it was crazy. I remember going.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
When I was younger, I would go to like Quaker youth retreats. And in my area, unprogrammed Quakerism is just like everyone's a lesbian. Everyone's gay. Everyone's like crazy hair. Like it was just a very inviting because it's the whole theory of it is that God is in the form of an inner light that everyone has. So.
Oh, really? So it's not an old religion.
I don't know when it was founded.
But let's talk about Quaker meetings. You knew enough that you didn't go to church. You weren't programmed Quaker, but you did go to...
We used to go to church. We would go to Quaker meeting, which was church when we were young.
So all the kids, you and your twin brother.
And my twin brother. And
your older brother?
My twin was like, you would always stand up. He was like, Annie, I would
to
like...
To talk.
Yeah. But I remember the nerves and stuff. It kind of reminds... I mean, it makes me think of stand-up a lot.
Sure.
You know, it's where I would practice my, you know, dick jokes or whatever.
Can you imagine?
I mean, I could. They would have to accept it as Quakerism, man.
The Quaker talks?
They would have to just, like, politely maybe.
Right. Someone will pull you aside, like,
watch the language. But I've cursed in meeting before. Felt great.
So you did this a lot. You were really brought up in the Quaker thing.
But not that heavily. When we were younger, then we went to a different school, and it was like we'd go here and there. And I tried to go back recently, and it was just sort of not that I'm against it, but it's just not something I felt like doing regularly.
But you believed in God? It didn't matter. Inner light.
Sure, so inner Quaker, light and right, stuff like that. I think I'm more like lately, like as I get older, more believing in God or something.
How's that going with Kurt?
Well, he's one of the reasons I'm like, I don't know how I ended up like meeting this person that makes me feel so good. It like feels like I went through so much shit to get there.
But
so it's like,
he will talk you out of God.
No, he was brought up.
I know.
So religious, but I don't feel like he would talk you out of God even. I think he believes in God more than me.
Does he?
Yeah, for sure.
This is a new Kurt. I thought he was the skeptic.
I mean, he's a skeptic of all, you know.
Yeah, of all things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he, you know.
Well, let's talk about, like, so the election happens and you just felt like you needed to go sit with Quakers?
Well, I just wanted a place to be quiet. I don't know. I just wanted to, like, try
to
terrified?
Find
some peace or whatever.
Yeah.
I was really triggered. I had a lot of, I have a history of sexual assault and stuff like that. And it was just really a lot. I mean, the election was, like, really, I mean, I was like, PTSD. I mean,
oh,
nuts,
really? Yeah. But. Oh, yeah. I felt that. I don't have a history of sexual assault, but I certainly felt like how many groups of people down are the Jews on the get on the train thing?
I know.
But, you know, that's so selfish.
Whatever.
It's just all terrifying.
Everything's and it was just like, I don't know. It was like, what the hell is happening?
Did it feel comforting?
It did feel comforting. It felt really good to be there and everything. Yeah. But I went to the Quaker school until fifth grade.
Yeah.
And then in fifth grade, we moved over to public school, me and my twin brother. My older brother had already gone. And public school, I had learning disabilities, so it was a little bit more difficult for me in public school.
How did that manifest itself? This was ADD?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I'm looking back, Mark, though, now, and I'm thinking about all the things my parents said were wrong with me, and I'm going, I don't know that there was really anything wrong with me.
But they were concerned? Were they...
Yeah, I mean, though, you know, when I was in kindergarten, yeah. I have a twin brother, and right. I was, you know, bigger than him.
Not identical.
Well, our penises are a little different, so they can't be identical.
He's circumcised? You're not?
Yeah.
Good for you.
I'm completely uncircumcised, uncut. I have to deal with Femunda cheese all the time.
Oh, you do? Wow, weird.
So in kindergarten, my brother had learning disabilities, so they had a choice to either hold both of us back or just Max.
Yeah.
And so they were like, we're not going to put our son through that, where it's like his sister's twin sister. So they held us both back. And then in second grade, I was having trouble reading.
Like dyslexic kind of deal?
I don't know. I think my parents didn't teach me to read.
Oh, really?
I think they thought the school was going to, and then the school was like, I think your parents are supposed to help with this.
Are they? I can't remember who taught me to read.
Yeah, whatever. I figured it out eventually. And I...
You're okay with it now?
A little bit. I can read. Now that Twitter's expanded their characters, not as much, but...
So when does the juvenile delinquency start?
Okay, so we go to the public school, and then all of a sudden, I'm just kind of hanging out with not good people. I just found myself with...
What kind of person were you? Were you shy? Were you because you're kind of
no?
Like,
I was like I was upset. Kind of like I a, had what am I?
You're kind of it seems like you're you're take charge kind of person.
Well, I had I kind of had to be so.
You did.
I learned young because okay, so I had a lot of problems. Like I was born breech, right? So I was born. My brother was born at we were born at midnight. So he's July 20th. I'm July 19th, and I kicked him out of the womb.
Yeah. And so you're born breech, so your feet came out first?
So I came out first. So I'm in an incubator. I don't know how much that affected but I had a lot of problems with tactile. I didn't like kind of signs of, I was on the spectrum of autism a little bit. So I didn't like to be touched or held, and I wouldn't breastfeed and stuff. But my mom said that I would really squish in with my brother. Would let him. Like,
oh, because you were, was the only thing you were close to.
Yeah, it was my brother. Yeah. So then, I had problems, so I didn't. My socks would really bother. There was like a lot of issues. Like I was always like upset. Like my feet would hurt if the seam wasn't in the right spot. I would ruin my day. Like I just couldn't.
Oh really?
Yeah, it was like constant fight. It was chaotic. We were always like late to school. Like things were just. Everyone in my family has ADD, so it's just
an explosion. But that sounds like more OCD ish.
Maybe, yeah. I think I am thinking more on the lines of OCD because I am messy, so I always think I'm not. But then.
But like
I can't go to
thing.
Sleep because I'm all of a sudden like panicking every night about some fucking weird thing I said that's not even a thing.
Oh, really? To somebody?
That feels OCD-ish.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it's just a scramble for control.
Scramble for control or like a way to punish myself or something.
Right.
Because I think...
Well, that's very predictive. That's consistent.
Right.
Like you can always rely on that. I'm an asshole.
Right. Well, it's easier because all these things that end up happening, which I'll tell you, it's like kind of to get through them, I just blame myself because it was too much to admit that like all the grown-ups in my life let me down that hard was like a lot scarier. Yeah. So up until very recently, I really blame myself. I just thought I was like a rotten piece of shit just wandering around.
So you worked through it some
of it. Yeah.
Well, let's go back. So the juvenile, the people you end up hanging out
with. Right, so I'm hanging out with people. We're like smoking cigarettes. Like we're being bad.
15, you're like 15?
13.
13?
Yeah, 13.
Wow. Just like bad, grimy, edgy kids?
I just wasn't, and I wasn't, it wasn't easy for me to like get good grade. Like it wasn't easy for me to get that sort of reinforcement. Yeah. So I guess I just went the other direction.
Right.
I don't know if I did it on purpose.
The bad girls and boys.
Right. Mm-hmm. But then, then when I was 13, we went to Mexico, my family, my mom and I got in a car accident. I was a swimmer at first for a while. I was on the swim team. I was going to train for the Junior Olympics.
And smoke?
I wasn't smoking yet.
Oh, so
I was
going
to train for the Junior Olympics, and then on the way to check out, my neighbor was driving.
Yeah,
her kid, another neighbor, and then my mom was in the front seat, and I was in the middle in the back. And my mom was going to see the program. I was going to have to go in the morning and at night.
Go and do a swim meet.
Yeah, it was going to be like a swim practice where they train you for the Olympics.
Yeah,
or for the JOs. And then so on the way, there's a drunk driver, a woman in a minivan. Who just comes over into our lane and just head-on collision.
Oh, my God.
Just crashes into us. They had to get the jaws of life to get the Marsha, my neighbor, out.
Yeah.
My mom hurt her chest. She was, like, in a neck brace. And I broke my foot. And the kid next to me, like, cut his eye open. And went to the hospital
like
and everything.
Eye or just...
His eyelid just was hanging down. It was very... He had no clue that was happening, too. It was so gross.
That's one of those things you remember in your mind.
Forever. I remember the shock and, like, feeling, like, very euphoric and giggling. I couldn't stop laughing.
Because you were just...
I couldn't believe what just happened. And I remember they were cutting my sock off because of my foot. And I was my older brother's sock, and I went, oh no, my brother's gonna kill me.
The
and
seam.
Like, he's not gonna get the seam. At that point I'd gone to occupational therapy, which cured me of my sock seam
with
issues.
The seam,
do you know what they fucking did to me at this occupational therapy?
What?
Because of my, it sounds like I got molested. I mean I did, but not from them.
Yeah.
But it sounds like so molesty when I tell people now. I went and saw this woman, and she ran, because I was so sensitive to certain touch and fabric and like stuff like that, she took a large vibrating furry, like almost like a car buffer, plugged it into the wall and just rubbed it all over my body. And then, which I mean, it really does that, like, until I came, and
and that's how it went away.
And then, but my mom would, she
I
had to take
a
scrub
brush.
Yeah. I can only come when I'm being buffed like a fucking car. So then my mom would have to take surgical brushes and scratch my skin every day to kind of desensitize me.
Really?
Yeah, which really hurts on your clit. And
it also seems inappropriate.
It's
that's
so inappropriate.
Your mom.
Yeah.
You
come on, mom, stop
aging.
Trying to bang me.
Yeah.
So that helped me with that.
Yeah.
I'm in the car accident, and now it's like the time where it's like it's going to be hard to start getting back into swimming, because I didn't like working hard, but I was naturally.
How bad was the foot? Bad?
I broke my fifth metatarsal when I was in a cast for a little while, and then I remember some kid bullied me and like stepped on my foot, and I had to keep my cast on for longer.
What the fuck? Who was that
fucker.
Guy?
His name was Mike.
Oh, really?
I don't remember his last name.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not going to say it.
Okay.
But whatever, who cares?
He was someone you went to school with?
Yeah, he was just some kid who gave the shit. Probably a crush
dick.
On me or something.
So now you got a broken foot.
So I had a broken foot, and it was like, I'm in seventh grade, I'm 12, I'm like, what am I going to do?
Right.
So I just sort of, that's the turn. I just started smoking cigarettes, started getting boyfriends, like I was just...
Yeah, and what happens in, what about Mexico?
We get money from the settlement, from this car accident.
For your mom's neck?
Right, from me and my mom, for being in this accident with this drunk lady, and then we take that and we go to Club Med with the family. We go to Huatuco, Mexico.
That's a nice thing to do with the settlement. Yeah, the whole family.
Yeah, pretty cool. Whole
all
family
five
goes.
Years?
All five of us. So then I don't know what my parents were thinking, but they did just let me. I just was by myself a lot in Mexico. I think they thought someone was watching. I was 13.
Yeah.
I think they thought someone was watching the kids, but nobody was. So I took an archery class, and there was an instructor there who was, I think he was 26 is what I recall. I'm 13. I just turned 13. So I'm hanging out with him afterwards. He's like, oh, I'll walk you back up to your place. And I remember he thinking we're going to my spot and he walked me up to his place.
Right.
And we go into his place and I'm like, oh, and he's like, he put on Journey Open Arms.
Ooh.
So that song is fucked for me. But, and then he,
it's not a big loss.
Yeah, I know. But I wanted to love it. My favorite. So then, and then he starts like massaging me and stuff, and I'm so uncomfortable, and I'm like, I have to go. And he's like, you're going to just go without kissing me? And I had to like make out with this old guy to leave. Like to me, like 26 when you're 13 is like the oldest person you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah, of course.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So then I end up being able, like,
had you made out before?
Yeah, I had made out with, what is 13?
But just like 13-year-old making out, like, you know, like, like, it's, what is that game? Minute in the Closet or whatever?
Yeah, whatever.
And like trying to French kiss.
Well, it's
for
usually
the first
7 minutes, but I guess some people.
Oh, yeah, and no, I'm quick.
Come a little quicker.
Yeah, a little quick. But no, that doesn't matter, obviously. But I was just wondering, this wasn't the first time.
No. It wasn't the first time I kissed. I had like a boyfriend, this kid Steve, that was like my, you know, we held hands
in the
hallway or whatever.
But it was still creepy, and the guy was old.
Yeah, like make out. Yeah, it was
kid.
So, and I was so scared. And so then I left. He didn't make me like have sex with him or anything. Uh-huh. So I leave, and then I go to the head of the like kids program or whatever. And I'm like, this guy did this. And then I just made sure, I remember, I think first before I did anything, I went down, I saw him like talking to people doing the archery instruction, this guy, Alex. And I just started screaming at him. I went, you're a fucking pedophile. You're fucking gross. Like I was so mad. I couldn't believe this had happened.
Yeah.
Screaming at him. And he's like, all like, you need to get out of here. And then I told, but that's when I started drinking on that trip. We were drinking. And then I told the guy, and then I think he ended up getting fired. But my parents like didn't know any of this happened.
You didn't tell them?
No, I don't know why I didn't feel comfortable telling my parents stuff, but I didn't. I never told them stuff.
So there was a whole kids program.
I think they just thought we were covered or something.
Right,
but
right.
I remember I fell asleep in some kid's house and they were mad at me.
How long were you at Club Med? A year?
Like, I mean, it could have just been like 4 or 5 days. I don't know. I get, I'm in, like, I was just a young, I think, yeah. I was pretty, I don't know what I looked like then. Maybe the middle handsome brother. I always thought I looked like a boy and stuff, but I'm kind of learning that I never did.
So you called the guy out, you got him in trouble.
Called
that was
him out,
good.
Got
you spoke
him in
up
trouble.
For yourself.
I mean, I always have. Yeah. But, so then, go back to school. And that wasn't, I didn't really, like, feel that much trauma from that.
Right.
I just remembered that one recently. And
really?
Then, yeah, I mean, it's not like I had repressed it, but I just have so many of these sort of things I got into because I wasn't really being watched. So
yeah,
I was very mature for my age. I got my period when I was 11. Like, I was just like,
right.
I ran into a girl from middle school at the mall and she was like, oh my God, I was just talking to my mom about you. Like, we saw you on something and she was talking about how crazy you were. And I really go, like, whenever someone calls me crazy, I'm like, tell me what type of crazy you mean.
Yeah.
And she was like, boy crazy. My mom used to be so nervous because you were so like you were so into boys.
Yeah.
And I wasn't there yet or whatever.
Right.
I was just like developed faster.
Like seventh grade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if that's when it normally starts, but I remember my seventh grade year was a little crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like everyone was making out.
Yeah.
That was the first time I felt boobs.
Yeah.
Like the first time that I, yeah.
How'd it feel?
I didn't know what to do with them,
yeah.
But I held them.
Yeah. There isn't like a real...
You know, it's just sort of
you
like...
You could do a lot of things with them, honestly.
Sure, but when you're in seventh grade, you just...
Yeah, you just put their hand on.
On it and maybe squeeze it a
yeah.
little. Is that it? We did it.
Push them together a little.
I don't know. I didn't do that.
Smush them.
I didn't do that because there was so much work. You had to work your way. There was a working your hand.
Yeah.
It took like an hour to work your hand into the bra because you did... At every
and
juncture...
And you were nervous.
Right.
Yeah.
At every juncture, you're like... Huh?
Your hands, the sweat, it's just slipping off the body.
Well, yeah, I guess that's when it happens in junior high.
I never like, I had my friend that I started hanging out with who was like kind of the bad girl.
Yeah.
She was already having sex with her boyfriend.
At 13.
At 13. She started having sex with him before she got her period. Like, I remember being like,
how old was the boyfriend?
He was only a year older, but right. He was the Sicilian kid who looked like he was 45 years old. I mean, he had like
full
back
beard.
And neck hair.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like, what the hell?
Yeah,
right. So it just looked so crazy.
Yeah.
But so I was hanging out with these people where like sex was kind of normal. And my mom is kind of masculine. Like she, I wasn't really taught, I didn't know how to dress feminine or anything.
Yeah.
So I kind of just started dressing slutty because that's what my friends were doing.
Right.
I was just like a little baby slut. I remember my high school had to change their dress code because of me and my friends.
Oh, really? That's got to
like,
stop.
Yeah, they're like, we can't, if we can see your nipple jewelry, there's problems. But so I'm in public school and I'm kind of struggling. I'm not doing well in school. I'm starting to smoke cigarettes and.
No drugs?
I smoked weed.
And
when
drinking?
I was 13 and I was drinking, yeah.
That started after Club Med?
Yeah, I started drinking in Club Med, yeah.
Really?
And then once I like broke the seal, I was like, all right.
Yeah, we're in.
You know, just hanging out with the wrong kids. And then I didn't want to keep going to public school. So my parents started looking at other schools for me. And
yeah.
They ended up sending me to the school in Philly and Chestnut Hill that's for juvenile delinquents. It's an alternative school. So it's either for juvenile delinquents or people.
Had you been getting in trouble?
I wasn't like, honestly, when I look back, like I get so mad at my parents because I'm like, why didn't you just tell me to not hang out with those kids? Because if I had been given any moment of discipline,
yeah,
I would have. Every time they disciplined me, I listened to them. And it's like my parents had this idea in their head. Or my dad was working. My mom wanted me to like her so much that she never disciplined me.
Yeah,
and then
I
got diddled left and right. Like, it's crazy the amount of times I had weird shit happen where I'm like, why weren't you watching me?
Yeah, and
I
also
because
when there's no discipline and there's no boundaries, you don't, like, you kind of are looking to connect with
I was looking for parents.
Right.
I was like, where, like, every time I would sit on a plane next to someone, I would be like, you know, up until recently, I realized.
And I think that predatory people feel that.
Yeah, they can tell when you're not being watched, too. They can really tell when you're,
and
I was sweet. I was sweet and I was misunderstood, you know, because
so
I would get upset.
So you go to the delinquent school?
So I ended up going to this delinquent school and it also had a good art program. And it was also for people with like, you know, there was a girl that thought she was a horse that galloped down the hall. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it wasn't it was like bullies and the bullied.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of. And so then I'm there and I'm at this crossroads. I'm like, do I lean into hanging out with the special needs kids or the true criminals?
Yeah.
So then I started hanging out with kids that were like really bad.
Yeah.
And not to say, my friend from the public school too, we got into a lot of trouble one summer. I was hanging out with gang members. I mean, I was sneaking out. I was breaking into houses with people. One guy that when I was 14, my friend and I met this guy at an outdoor mall, the Roosevelt Mall. these guys were, you know, we had pagers back then. They'd give us their pager number. Right. And we would lie and say we're 14. We'd say we were 16 or something, which is still gross. And they're like 20. I don't know.
Right.
And so then we would sneak out to go meet them. And I remember going, we went to this one house and we went through the window. And then we're like in the pool and like smoking weed and drinking with them, drinking 40s and stuff. And then we left through the window too. And I'm just like naive. Like, I'm like, what? Why are we going through the window? And they're like, none of us live here. I'm like, oh, we just fucking broke into this house. Right. Had no clue. And then I'm like kissing this one guy. And, you know, I was like, I was prudish. I was like, I started having sex when I was 14, but I didn't want to. Like, I wasn't ready to have, like, it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was a more of a peer pressure situation for me a lot of the times, which.
Like, who was it, with a boyfriend or?
Yeah. But like, I think I had already had sex when I was making out with this gang member dude. I think I'd already had sex.
14 is when 14, you started. Yeah. That's young.
On a waterbed. Northeast Philly.
You know that guy? You still know the guy?
He was in prison last I saw.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't want him?
Not for fucking me.
Was he older?
He was 16. I was 14. He was a real fucking piece of shit. It really like shaped a lot of my.
Why? How so?
Well, he was just so nasty to me, and I was so like in love with him because I was too young for even those emotions. Like, it's just too much to go through.
Right.
And he just treated me bad. He would like talk shit on me. He was nasty. He was mean. He was a juvenile delinquent. He was gross.
And
he was like
jail.
A shitty dude.
Right.
I don't know if he's in jail now, but he was in jail for a while. He got into heroin and stuff. Most of the people from my high school was a fucking shit show. And most of the people from there, I feel like a true survivor. Most of the people from there ended up like dead in prison or like working at a Verizon kiosk. There's like a few success stories, but it was a small school and it was not, they didn't, didn't have to read. And I don't think like, I feel like I was completely uneducated.
Yeah, well, yeah, because like if no one teaches you to prioritize that shit, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And you're just going to want to hang out with people that make you feel like you're somebody.
Or feel something. It's like it was exciting, you know, to go do all this stuff. So anyway, so I'm making out with this guy. We get out of the window.
The pool,
I'm making out with this guy. They drop us off at the house. Luckily, I don't have to like do anything. We sneak back into my friend's house.
Yeah.
Then it comes out that the guy I had made out with was wanted for homicide.
Get the fuck out of here. This is the shit
that I was just like going to the mall and wandering into.
Yeah.
When I was 16, 15 or 16, there was this art teacher who, this like white guy with dreads, and his wife had dreads, and she was my advisor. And he had actually gone to the school, so he was like a
alumni.
Yeah, of this fucking juvenile delinquent school. So he, they pretty much groomed me and a few other people.
Yeah.
And we would go over to their house. Like, his wife called my mom and was like, I'm going to tutor Annie. And so I would go over to their house. They would buy me whatever alcohol I wanted, weed.
Yeah.
And then she would just like write a paper for me.
Right.
And then, you know, they didn't want me to be going home drunk. So then they convinced my mom that it would be a good idea for me to start sleeping over at their house to sort of curb the edge of me leaving to go to college later.
Uh-huh.
That this would be a good positive thing for me.
And your mom bought it?
My mom fucking bought it.
And you're having a good time?
So I think it's cool. Right. And I have this one friend, John, this guy friend in school, who he's like, this is so weird. You guys are going over there. This is not good.
Yeah.
Because there'd be a bunch of us. But my friend, me and my best friend at the time would sleep over there. My parents like gave a futon from our house for it. It makes me so sick when I think about it. One night, nobody else was there and it was just me.
Yeah. And the two of them?
No, she was gone too. It was just him.
Yeah.
So it was just the two of us in the house. And I woke up in the middle of the night and he was watching me sleep.
Uh-huh.
Like laying next to me with his face on his fist.
Yeah.
Just staring at me, propped up, staring.
And you're 16?
And 15 or 16, I can't remember. And then I go, I guess 16, because he would probably have gotten a lot more trouble if I was 15. Unfortunately, Pennsylvania sucks with their laws. But so I'm like, that's so fucking weird. That's so creepy. I'm like, what are you doing? And then he just kind of laughs and goes in the other room. So then the next day he's like, he's my art teacher. He's like, oh, I want to, can I draw you nude? This is at the house. So this is just the two of us. And I like want to say no, but I keep like, I don't know. I just don't want to, I felt like it would be accusing him of something if I had said no.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't know what was going to happen. So I remember leaving my socks on because I was like, that was my protest in my head. I was like, then I won't be fully nude or whatever. And then he comes out of the shower or something and he's like, it's better if I'm nude too. The drawing's better. And at this point, there's no way I'm going to be able to say a word. I'm like complete shock. can't talk. I'm just like this kid, like, well, how am I in this fucked up situation? And then, and just trying to in my head be like, this is not what's happening. There's like got to be another like excuse for what's going on. And then he sat on the back of my legs and he jerked off on me. And I like wet in my knee pit. And then I had to like, I mean, it's like, so I usually tell it funnier, but I like, it's just so crazy. I can't even believe it. And I remember like getting up and I didn't even wipe it off. I just pulled my pants up because I didn't even want to like do anything. And then I had to go, I was working at a pottery place and I had to go to work. So I go to work and I tell my manager what happened.
Yeah.
And he's like, this 19-year-old dude. He's like, that's child molestation. That's crazy. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know what to think about it. And then I call my best friend who had also used to stay there with me. And she goes, oh, he's gotten like cheeky with me before. Just tell him to fuck off or something. I'm like, cheeky? What the fuck are you talking about? I don't think I told her about the jizz part because I was like really ashamed of that.
Right.
But I was like, he just did some weird shit. And she was like, don't even worry about it. So then I'm like, what?
Yeah.
So I'm like, am I making this up? And then I go to that friend, John, and he's like, no, dude, this is crazy. I knew fucking some shit was going on. He's like, that's insane. So then I was like, all right. So I go, I'm like, it can't just be me. So I go around, I talk to a bunch of girls. And my graduating class was 17 kids, so there's not that many
small
people
school,
at the
school. Yeah.
So I go around, I found a girl that was having a full-on affair with him. I found a girl that he had had sex with when he was supposed to be tutoring her in art. And a girl that he had exposed himself to, pulled his bone around, been like, look what you do to me. And then maybe a couple more, but the only one that was willing to go forward with me was the girl that he exposed himself to. So, and she didn't have a very good reputation for being honest, which sucked. I completely believed her story, but it wasn't like my most credible.
You were this to go forward with the school?
Yeah. So then I go to one of the art teachers, the other art teacher. This art teacher that had done this had gotten fired for throwing something at another teacher like a day before this happened. Like right when this was, so he wasn't really like, technically, I guess he wasn't employed.
A day before it happened with you?
Yeah, like that week or something he had gotten fired. I mean, it's like crazy.
Yeah.
So then, so he wasn't at the school anymore. So I went to his mentor and this art teacher who I used to really kind of look up to as a father.
Yeah.
And I told him what happened with this other girl. And he goes, you know, I'm torn because half of me, I want to go kick his fucking ass. Like, I want to go fucking scream at him for doing this. And then the other half, I wasn't there, so I don't know what happened. And I'm like, I mean, I'm fucking telling you, what benefit do I get?
Yeah.
There's no, literally, I'm not like telling people about this. I'm not going around to the other students.
Yeah.
I don't want attention for this.
Right.
I just want a predator to be stopped.
Yeah.
I'm like, I already got gotten. I just don't want it to keep, like, I want to stop the cycle.
Yeah.
So I haven't told my parents about it yet. So then the art teacher takes me to my advisor who she's like, I knew something bad was happening.
What about the wife?
The wife had left after he got fired.
No shit.
So then my advisor's like, I knew this was happening. My other advisor was like, I knew something was happening. And I'm like struggling with that line too, where I'm like, you knew something was happening, but yet nobody fucking did anything. Like nobody wanted to get their hands dirty or do anything like to stop this thing. So I was like, I guess it's me that's going to do it. So then she makes me go to the principal. This is all within 2 hours.
Right.
So then I got to go to the principal, tell him this story. It's a humiliating story.
Right.
So I was like so embarrassed, I was so ashamed, and then telling the principal, and the principal's like, the art teacher was still, even though he wasn't employed as a teacher, he was still in charge of the glassblowing studio. So he's like, all right, I gotta like ban him from the campus or whatever, and you're gonna have to call the police. So then I gotta call my parents, tell them everything that's going on. I gotta go into the police. By the time I get home from school, this stupid fucking principal had told Greg, the teacher, everything I said about him, who it was that said it, like a fucking lunatic. I'm a kid, like no protection from anyone. So then by the time I get home, I have all these messages on my answering machine from his wife being like, you fucking liar, you stupid bitch, why would you do this to us? You're a fucking bitch. Like all of this stuff where I'm like, Jesus. So then,
God.
I tell my parents, and before I told them, I tried to go back to the house, before I told anyone. I tried going back to the house once with my friend and with them, and Greg, the teacher, had said something to me. He'd insulted me somehow. Like, he called me something. So I can't remember. I wish I could remember what the word was, but I remember not knowing what the word meant.
Was it like the day after?
Yeah. It's like really soon after that.
Yeah.
And he said something nasty to me, and I'm like, you're going to fucking do that to me and then also make me feel like a piece of shit? Like... So then he said something and I got so like offended that he would dare speak to me. And I just was like, get the fuck away from me. I'm never going to fucking talk to you again. Like, you're a sick fucking pedophile. You're fucking gross. And so he goes off into the other room. So I'm not going to keep yelling at him. And my friend's like, oh, come on. Like, I'm like, you know why I'm mad. He's a fucking predator, dude. He's sick. That's like a child molester. And she's like, come on, Annie. You know, and then so my dad picks me up. I go home. And then my mom at one point, she had a meeting with his wife, Debbie, to discuss how to get me and Greg back together again. Oh, they had such a good bond. We don't want them to be upset. So my mom went on a meeting with this woman to try to work it out. And then she's like, don't you think you and Greg can work it
after
out?
After all the shit hit the fan?
This is before I had told her what happened.
Oh.
But I think when your daughter is sleeping over at a grown-up's house, and then all of a sudden she's like, I don't ever want to see this man again.
You should know
you can kind of like jump to some conclusions.
Right.
So then when I did come out with it, she was like, yeah, I thought maybe something was going on. Everyone like who thought something was going on, I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, Jesus Christ, why did I have to do everything on my, I mean, it's insane. I'm like a
right,
kid.
Yeah.
So then we go to court.
Wow.
And his lawyer ends up being my fucking, this girl I played softball with, dad. I'm like, can anyone have my back? I mean, yeah. It's crazy. That was very upsetting. But I guess he told my parents that he thought he could do a better job for me, which is fucking bullshit.
Yeah. Who
so
could?
The lawyer. It's like, why don't you, this is not appropriate. Why don't you fucking not be his lawyer?
Yeah.
Isn't
right.
that crazy? Like,
yeah. Well, that you knew his daughter and that it's all.
Yeah. Yeah. You came to every softball game of mine and this is cool with you?
Yeah.
So we get to court and he fucking cut his dreads off the teacher.
Right.
And I remember being like so pissed, but now I'm like, sick. Got rid of one more white guy with dreads.
Yeah.
If I had to get jizzed on as a kid for that, totally worth it. But so we ended up doing a plea deal because of the way Pennsylvania goes. It's like because he didn't penetrate.
Yeah.
Like I would have maybe lost or something. And so he pled guilty. And he got like 3 years consecutive or 3 years simultaneous probation for both of us.
Uh-huh.
And I think he wasn't allowed to teach anymore, but then he just became a college professor, I think. And he's just a successful artist in Philadelphia now.
Still, he mm-hmm. still is?
Mm-hmm.
And he yep. did. And did anyone else come with you on the case? Were there?
I do. I blacked out a lot of it, honestly. Like I don't, there's like, I'm really trying to like go back and
yeah.
I've been asking my parents a lot of questions and
yeah.
just asking people what happened, but I do believe my advisor, Stacy, came with me, and I think someone from the Rape Crisis
no,
Center.
No other girl came forward?
Just the one girl that he had exposed himself to.
Oh, she was
forward.
In the court,
yeah.
too?
Yeah, she was in court, too. And I don't know if this affected her as much, but...
Has anyone come forward in years after?
There's no record of it anywhere. I mean, it's got to be. There's a record of it somewhere, but it's
sure,
not
in
on...
the court.
It's before the internet, so there's not... If you Google him, you just
What'd
look
you
at
say
him as
about
a very...
Rape Crisis?
I had gone to the Rape Crisis Center. The cops sent me to the Rape Crisis
yeah.
Center, and I met with them once. And I remember reading Lolita in the fucking Rape Crisis Center.
It was just there?
No, I brought it.
Oh.
But it's like, how molested is that to be like, I draw cartoons. I want to draw a cartoon of me in the Rape Crisis Center reading Lolita.
So how did this victim. Affect, you know, the years right after? Or do like, what ultimately
well,
happened? You said that
it was
happened.
So traumatizing because the...
No one had your back.
No one had my back.
Not
I mean,
even
that
your
girlfriend.
Parents.
That girlfriend. I mean, they drove me to court and everything.
Right.
But
no,
everyone seemed just like upset that I was making like not that nothing happened, but like oh, we wish we weren't dealing with this. It was just so fucked up. It was just a really fucked up situation. Everyone in my school was kind of like calling me a liar and like I didn't have support. My best friend told everyone what happened, said I was lying about it. Her mom was going to testify as a character witness against me.
Why would they say you were lying?
I don't know. When I speculate, I think that maybe she was having an affair with him or something. I don't know. Because I can't understand why you would so... It was just like this level of denial on everyone's part. And
so
the school was probably so scared that I was going to like come
right.
after them. But I remember the cops told me that I go, well, you should also check in with my friend because she said he had done something. They go, oh, we talked to her. She said that she told us that you're lying, that there's nothing true about what you said. So then I come into school the next day. And the only way you get kicked out of this juvenile delinquent school is if you hit someone or you sell drugs. So I knew I couldn't hit her or anything. And I was a Quaker. It wasn't what I want. But I was so I couldn't believe it. Like, how could you do this to me? It was so hard to get there. And then you're going to tell them I'm fucking lying. You're supposed to be my best friend. You know what happened. So I go into her class. She was in a Spanish class. And I start pounding. And she hated the word cunt. So I start pounding my fist on the desk in front of her and just going, you're a fucking cunt. You're going to tell the cops I'm a liar. You owe me a fucking apology. She's like, I don't owe you anything, bitch, or whatever. I get pulled out of the class, reprimanded, treated like a fucking monster because of this girl. It's like the craziest shit in the world to me. And then I just remember them like yelling at me and I'm going like, are you guys crazy? Do you have any clue what's going on? or any of your responsibility in it. I go go to court. He gets the 3 years. I was like, they let me graduate early.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
But you stayed at the school.
No, I graduated that year when I was 16.
Yeah.
You know, we had a small graduation ceremony. I remember my teacher, the teachers would give you each, like, your advisors would give you, like, a little speech about you.
Mm-hmm.
And my advisor was like, you know, she'll stand up against things even if she loses things out of it. You know, like, she said something about it. So that
she's
was nice.
A fighter.
Yeah, I'm like, can someone just fucking actually help me? But so there was that. But then I went back. I went on to go to Santa Fe and go to college and everything. And
how'd you pick Santa Fe?
Because I graduated when I was 16, I took a year off. And I went to Hawaii and I did this dolphin. There was this place called the Marine Mammal Lab in Oahu and in Honolulu. And I trained dolphins for like a month. It was like a program you paid for or something, but it was cool.
Was that nice?
Yeah, it was neat. It was cool. I mean, I was 17. Everyone else was older, so I didn't really fit in with the crew as much, but it was fun to train dolphins. It was really cool. It was interesting.
Yeah.
I ended up working with autistic kids later, and a lot of the behavior management stuff was very similar. It was like very like interesting to have like a background with behavior modification, but with
sure, you probably learned some new tricks too.
Yeah, and I learned how to. Yeah, I learned how to have a really big dick. The male dolphins have huge dicks.
They do.
Then I did a program where I went to Central America and I did service work there.
Oh wow!
With like a group of kids.
That was a Quaker thing?
Mm-mm. No, that was just like a
Just wanted to do that? Or
yeah, I wanted to travel. I wanted to do something good. You know, I just been through all this shit. I just like wanted to like, and I felt rotten. I felt like that was all my fault.
Yeah.
I felt like I was just like a piece of shit. And like,
yeah,
I just felt like so gross. Even though like I knew I still also had a confidence, but it was like, it's just I had to like jump on the grenade for myself. So I took that summer when I came back from the service work and I started working with kids with special needs.
Yeah.
So I was a head counselor at an Easter SEALs camp and I like had a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. I worked with kids with like cerebral palsy and spina bifida.
Wow, you really did a lot of service work.
Yeah, it was fun. That's I liked it. It was fun. And it was a really fun job. I wanted to like do something. I was thinking about maybe becoming a special ed teacher or I like doing art. So I was like going to do that or art, and I wanted to get away from Philadelphia. I didn't realize why at the time, but looking back, it's like, I mean, I was so fucking traumatized. So I wanted to get as far away from my family. I just wanted out.
Yeah.
So I looked at all these different schools, and even though I loved my parents like the most all the time, obsessively throughout all of it, I still just needed to get away. So I looked at the College of Santa Fe and I liked their art program and they had a teaching program. So I was like, I can do what I need to do here. I thought the students were really cool.
Yeah.
And Santa Fe was a neat town. And so I moved there and I did like counseling psychology. I mean, my mom wrote my papers. Like I didn't fucking learn much.
But yeah.
I had a great time. My teachers were incredible. Like I had really good teachers.
And you were there on and off for 8 years?
Mm-hmm, on and off for 8 years. I had incompletes for like 2 years. And then the college was going out of business. So my art teacher, Susan York, who's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
My art professor, she hits me up out of nowhere. And I used to not get along with her because she had a class at 8:30 in the morning that I would cut.
Right.
And she would call me and I'd be like,
right.
I was so mad at her because I'm like, I'm 18 now. I don't have to come to class, which is so crazy. I had no clue what I was saying, wasting money. And she was like, I just want you there. I just like believe in you. And so
What were you doing? Painting or drawing?
What was she painting? I think.
But what
or maybe
you?
She was just.
What were you doing in art?
I didn't have a medium. I draw now a little bit, but my mom's a really good artist and it was just something we would do together. She got me into art classes and stuff. You know, I had some really good mentors in high school. He taught me how to paint with a medium semen and you can, it's body art.
That's right.
But so she calls, she messages me and she's like, hey, I just want to let you know the college is going out of business. I had just moved back to New York or I just moved to New York.
Did you?
I just quit drinking. I just started doing comedy.
You'd finished college.
I thought I had finished. Like I was like, I'll get to it. Like there's a couple papers I have to write, you know. Right, but I was like, I'll get to it. I move on with my life. Like we'll deal with that later. Yeah. I did 90% of the work.
Does it matter when the college shuts down? I mean, if you
it mattered to me
because
like,
you can never get your degree now that college.
You can lie and say you have that degree if you want. Like I feel I'm always like congratulations, graduates.
But can't you transfer the credits?
Yeah, but I fucking hate school. Was a goddamn nightmare for me. I would panic every night. Like,
sure. So you're two incompletes away from graduating.
I'm two incompletes away from graduating.
Okay.
But I don't realize. I'm just like, deal with it later.
Yeah.
Like, repress it. I mean, I was drinking so heavily, and when I quit drinking, you know, I had been sober maybe 3 weeks, and I get this email that's like, you have 2 weeks to finish these, and one of them was like statistics.
No.
Like, who the fuck remembers statistics?
Right.
And so I had to fly back to Santa Fe on a credit card. Fly back, do all these papers,
Jesus.
Write all these things, finish it up. And then finally I got my degree, and then the school goes out of business.
Yeah.
Then it comes back as another thing, goes out of business again.
But you got the degree.
I got the degree. Yeah, I needed it for myself. It was just like to know that I could finish
closure.
Something.
You want that hanging over you for the rest of your fucking life.
Exactly.
So now we're back to where we come full circle here. So, and we talked about you starting out in comedy, but like now you're out here. Like when I was working with you, you were dating a skateboard guy.
Oh, yeah. Rollerblader?
Rollerblader, maybe.
Well, that was a couple years ago. I think it was after that. I don't think I was dating anyone. I was so into comedy. Like, I was just so wanted, like, I just wanted to be my career always.
Yeah.
I never was like, I'll try this out.
Right.
It was just a thing I just felt a calling to. And it was really like the only thing, because I was going to be a special ed teacher. I would have burned out on that in a second. You can only wipe so many fucking 18-year-old boys' asses before you're like, maybe.
Uh-huh.
Maybe I don't want to do this every day of my life, though it was a pleasure. Thank
so
you for
just
letting me wait for assholes.
You locked in and you did it New York style and you just started.
Yeah, I just went in
doing
hard.
Every set you could.
Yeah, and I went in and I knew I had kind of befriended some comics and I went to a mic with them and one of them had said, and I don't know if this is good advice or bad advice, and you know, people should do whatever they want, but he was like, just try to not like hook up with the comics because it's going to be harder to get respect.
Right.
And so I had that in my head, right? And
yeah.
So, but I was drinking so much. I was blackout drunk all the time.
Right.
From age of like 21 to 25, I mean, blacked out, waking up in terrible situations. I had a fucking real bad thing happen to me in New Mexico when I was blacked out drunk. And my roommate like found this guy fucking, like literally picking me up off the ground and fucking me on the couch and stuff. And that was like a whole...
Another
where I'm just like, I can't drink. I can't like protect. I got to be able to protect myself.
Oh,
nobody's
did you tell the school or.
Well, he wasn't. He didn't go to the college, and this was after the college. This was just when I was living in Santa Fe, and I tried to get him to admit it, or it was just. It was like this. I was just.
Yeah.
In
fucked
a fucking
up.
Fucked up spiral.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I was getting wasted and fucking people all the time and stuff.
How much
and,
do you think was that a reaction? To, you know, what you'd gone through.
I think everything was that. I think my childhood was really hard, too. I mean, it was just really rough. I was just kind of always, like, bad or something, you know, like rotten.
You felt shitty.
Yeah,
and
I felt shitty.
And you couldn't stop yourself from doing things that made you feel shitty about yourself.
Well, I just wanted to break. I wanted to black out. I wasn't getting wasted to have fun and be drunk. I wanted to fucking break. I was like, I hated myself.
And
I just
like,
didn't want to be near myself.
So what changed? I mean, what made you stop?
I wanted to do comedy really bad. And I also, it was like, I can't trust myself to not get blacked out. That's the whole point. I have no interest in being like a little drunk.
Right.
So I can't protect myself there. And then I got in a scooter accident. I was driving blackout drunk one night. I woke up in the morning with my chin split open. I had road rash all over my boobs. I almost lost a fucking nipple. I had cuts all up the front of my arms and hands.
Oh my God.
Down my knees. Like the dress I'd been wearing looked like someone had slit my throat. So I woke up out of like, I just had these foggy memories of, I knew I'd crashed my scooter. There's blood everywhere. And I knew I felt that someone had picked me up that didn't like, I remember it was like someone that didn't usually like me found me. And was very nice to me and brought me back to my house.
Not to the hospital?
Drove me back. No, because I was wasted. I was like, please don't take me to the hospital. Because I didn't want... I was like, please don't.
You want DWI or whatever.
Because I was going to get in trouble. So then I wake up and I called my entire family. And that's all I remembered was that. And then I called my entire family and told them I needed to go to rehab.
Yeah.
And then I had to call them all in the morning and be like, just kidding. I was in a blackout. Disregard. It was Father's Day, I remember. I was like, you guys, I'm fine. Like, I was blacked out. My parents were like, you needed, like, an ambulance. Like, what are you talking about? I was really fucked up. So then I go and I get my stitches. I got 9 stitches in my chin. And
So you went to, you woke, the next day you got stitches?
Yeah. It's not. I probably could have had a way better scar, too.
It's gnarly.
And, yeah, it was really, like, I almost died for sure. And I was thought it was funny, you know, like I was like trying to laugh it off. I was out drinking the next night with like wounds all over my face.
Yeah.
And then I meet this guy the next night. I'm petting this puppy at a bar. And this guy goes, "Do you not remember me?" And I'm like, "No." And he goes, "I found you yesterday. I found you." And I was like, "Oh." He's like, "That's how fucking damn, dude." He's like, "I thought you were drunk, but that's really drunk." And he rides a motorcycle. And he was like, "Listen, I understood." And so then this girl came by. I found out it was this manager of a bar that I would get wasted at. So she was usually yeah. yelling at me and kicking me out.
Right.
So he's like, "So I gave you to her and she drove you home." And I knew, like I told her, I was like, "Listen, you can take her to the hospital, but it's going to be a real shit show for her with the cops if you do that." So they ended up dropping me off, which was, I'm glad.
These are Santa Fe people.
Yeah, these are just people. It's a small town. You know?
I know. I used to go up there.
Yeah. I go.
Everybody knows what's up.
Yeah, everybody. I mean, the cops all knew me. And when I told them later what happened, they were like, "You would have got an aggravated DUI for assaulting yourself because you hurt yourself."
Huh.
So who knows if that's true, but that's what they said to me. So I'm like, "Thanks. I'll never call the cops." Way to let me know that I made the right decision, not doing the right thing. But so I get the stitches, and then it's like, I know I need to quit, and I know, so I'm like, if I move out of Santa Fe, maybe, and I move to New York.
What made you want to do comedy?
I was, my dad, I don't know, I was always funny, like, I was always making my dad laugh. And
you just, but you saw, you know, no one told you you could do it or anything, you just sort
my
of
my college professors always were like, "Can you just go do stand-up?"
Oh,
like,
so you're so it was fucking on disruptive. The, right, yeah, yeah.
But I was always like, I kind of had a way of,
yeah. I had that.
Making people
yeah.
laugh. Yeah, it was yeah. funny.
Just interrupting things.
Yeah, like yeah. completely like somehow sort of making it about
undermining
me, but enjoying it.
The
yeah.
leader.
And then so my dad's very funny, very, yeah. very funny. So it was a lot of like trying to impress him. And when he sure. retired and we had this like really bonding.
Is he still around?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, he's around. I love him. He'll probably be listening to this, which makes
I
me
feel
nervous.
Like they came to the show.
They did, yeah.
Yeah, and I
yeah,
met
sweet.
Them. Yeah,
they're sweet. I mean, my mom is kind of banned right now because she fucking heckled me in Philly recently. When I was headlining and completely ruined an entire almost sold out show. Fucking psycho.
Well, that's all of it.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, she threw a hand.
She made it about her.
Yeah, it was crazy. And I'm telling her, I'm going, she threw a fucking wrapped present. It was Christmas weekend. She threw a wrapped present on stage. So I have to open a present. And then I have to explain who the fuck my mom is, where she's from. Like, I'm like, "Mom, they don't know me yet. Like, what the hell? Stop yeah. acting like, I mean, this is like."
Made it about her. Yeah, and also, like, it gets you off balance. I mean, it seems like there was a competitive element to the relationship.
Yeah, it's really weird. I don't know.
So when you got sober, how'd you do it?
So I moved to New York to do comedy.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it. I'm drinking crazy, right? Yeah. Nobody else is drinking like me. I'm not around people. In yeah. Santa Fe, a lot of people were drinking as
right.
much as me. Nobody else. And I'm like, now I'm in a more dangerous situation. And I'm like, I remember I would like joke. I was like, "Should I just bring a rape kit with me? Because this is crazy. I'm just like, I'm just offering myself out there to the wolves, you know?"
Yeah.
And so finally, my friend Abby Luck, who's still one of my best friends in the whole world, who I was staying with, she's an amazing artist.
Yeah.
She, an animator, she was like, "Just I'll go with you to an open mic." So we go to an open mic. I've already been told at this point, like, it's not, I already know it's not a good idea for me to like hook up with anyone or do anything.
Yeah.
And I already am thinking I want to quit drinking. I've been in
right.
that mindset for about a year. So I go to the mic. I bomb, obviously. I like black out. I fucking drop my set list. I don't know what, I ended up yelling at everyone. I don't know what I said or did. And I'm very upset. I'm very hard on myself. I'm sitting at the bar and this comedian who I don't like, I don't enjoy him. I think he's unfunny and annoying, right? He comes, sits next to me and he keeps buying me beer or buying me alcohol. And I'm like, "Nah, man, I'm not. Like, I don't want to hang out with you. Like, I'm an alcoholic. Like, don't buy me drinks."
Yeah.
Like, I can't say no. So, of course, he keeps buying me drinks. And he's like, "Don't worry about it. You know, it's just stand up," which obviously that's true. Your first open mic, who gives a shit? But
right.
I was so sure this was my life's.
Right.
I just failed
this
at this
calling.
Thing.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah. So I was so upset.
Yeah.
And I remember doing Jaeger, taking a shot at Jaeger,
yeah.
which I had already quit.
Yeah.
So I was like, uh-oh. And then I end up blacking out, waking up in this open micer's apartment in Bushwick. It's snowing out. I'm on his air mattress. I'm like, this is the bottom. This is it. I like look at him. I'm fully clothed. I hadn't done anything with him.
Yeah.
But I wake up just like, fuck, why? Like, what am I doing with my life? And I'm just like, I'm going to quit drinking. I'm
on
done.
An air mattress.
I'm
in
fucking
Bushwick
done. Like, I'm going to do this.
Storm.
Yeah. And I'm like, the one thing I didn't want to do, I'm already like,
yeah,
at this guy's
halfway
house and
there,
shit.
Yeah.
yeah. So then I quit drinking. I stopped drinking. I call my friend Tate Fletcher. Do you know who he is?
No.
He's like a buddy of Rogan's. He's a like MMA
uh-huh.
trainer and
yeah.
motivational speaker guy. But he was my friend in Santa Fe. And I knew that he had been sober. So I called him. And he was like, just say to yourself 30 days for now. So I wasn't too overwhelming.
Yeah.
And he's like, and just go to meetings and, you know, you can either talk or not. You can also just listen. You don't have to do anything. Just go.
Yeah.
Check it out. And once I went to my first meeting, I was like, this is a fucking problem. I got to be here, you know?
Yeah.
So then I started doing the 90 and 90 and I knew like it wasn't going to just be, I just was like, I can never do this again.
Yeah.
It was too life or death. It was too, I was going to fall. I couldn't believe like people weren't dying in the train tracks all the time. Cause I'm right. like sloppy drunk falling downstairs and shit.
Yeah.
So
how did it feel to get sober that first time? Were you crazy?
I couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
And then this thing happened with my school. So then I'm like flying back and I was staying with my friend Abby, but her friend Paul, like I insulted him. He was playing guitar and I went, ooh, I love the Goo Goo Dolls. And he was like, you have to leave. You have 2 days. And I'm like, but I'm getting sober. And it's so funny when you get sober, nobody cares.
Yeah, yeah.
You're so like in yeah, your yeah. own life.
I'm winning. I'm. You should
but
be proud
me.
Of me.
But it's me. I need your help. He's like, fuck you, bitch.
Yeah.
And I'm glad he did that. It was helpful for me to have someone fucking say no to me.
Yeah.
And Abby was like, sorry, dude, you're out. You know, yeah. I can't do anything. But, and I'm like, she was always saying one of her favorite moments with me is when I was like crying and I was like, but the Goo Goo Dolls joke was totally worth it. I'll never take it back. So then I ended up staying with someone who was in the program.
Yeah.
And it was good. It was really good for me. And then it started to feel like something I was going to rebel against and start drinking against if I kept going to it. That's how I felt. I felt like very...
Did you get a sponsor? Did you,
I had a sponsor.
Do the stuff?
I wasn't.
Yeah.
I didn't like the steps.
Right.
I didn't like the first step at all.
Yeah.
The giving up my will or whatever.
Right.
I was very upset with that one.
Yeah.
I was like, I just gave up drinking, motherfuckers. I'm pretty proud of myself.
Well, I think it's designed to enable you to realize that you can't do it.
Right.
Yeah.
But so...
It's easy to make it bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I definitely was like, I'm not giving up my will. Like, I was like, fuck this. I could never get through the first step.
But you did know that you couldn't drink.
Oh, I knew I could never drink. I was like, you know, I try to not say never just because that's a crazy thing to say, but...
Right.
I think because I was able to replace it with comedy.
Yeah.
Because I just started going like 5 mics a night and stuff. It's like very easy for me to not.
And you put together your set.
My set. Do you want to hear my first joke?
Yeah.
All right. I was like, my mom just joined Facebook. This was right when moms were finding out about Facebook.
Yeah.
She goes, she's been tagging me in all these like really embarrassing baby pictures. Like there's this one, her vagina just makes my head look so small.
Yeah.
That was it.
That's a good one.
A little one. I remember I did one of Donnell's shows and Marina Franklin was like, that's your first joke? She's like, all right.
And then like, and now you've been working, you've done like, you know, Comedy Central Half Hour, you've done an album.
I haven't done any specials or albums, just from my own.
But you're out there headlining.
Yeah, yeah, I headline and I did... I had a show on talk show on E for very briefly for like 4 episodes, and I did. I was on some MTV stuff.
Yeah, but now like,
and I worked on, but now you know, like I just worked on
The Sacha Baron Cohen thing.
Baron Cohen show,
you and Kurt.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you've known Kurt for a long time.
He's been my best friend for like 7 years.
And it just happened.
Well, I'm really good friends with his ex girlfriend too. So they were a couple. So I never looked at him like Karen.
Karen.
So they were a couple. I just never looked at him like that.
Yeah.
I never even considered him like that. And but he was always like a family. Like it was like a family.
Right.
He's always the friend. We always lend each other $500 here and there.
Right,
and
right.
It was always situation. And they broke up and I still wasn't looking at him like that. And then we started working on the show. Comedically, it's just like such a click.
Yeah.
And for years. I used to stay at his house when I would go to New York. I would sleep on one couch. He would sleep on the other couch. And then his girlfriend would get the bedroom because he has like night terrors and stuff.
Yeah.
So pretty much we would just be like living next to each other in filth.
Yeah.
While our beautiful angel was in her beautiful, you know, like I love her so much.
And nothing ever happened.
Never. It wasn't like, he had promised me once. I remember I used to wear a necklace that said pig.
Yeah.
And he made me take it off. He's like, don't wear that. Like, that's not what you are. Like, and, you know, I went to him because it was just, I feel like I had a little bit of a rough go with other comedians when I started. I went into comedy with that story, you know, like having gone home with that guy. And then I go to that mic the next week and he's telling the story as if I had fucking sucked his dick or something. I was really upset.
Yeah.
So I get in and I go up and my first joke on the open mic, the next open mic was, you know, I've woken up bleeding. I've woken up on park benches. I've woken up in a bikini in the middle of the winter. Like,
right.
I never considered quitting drinking until I woke up on that motherfucker's air mattress and I literally dropped the mic. So, and it was like great. I felt good about it and I was excited to do comedy, but I had a lot of like rumor. I mean, they spread a rumor when I got Montreal. Some people spread
the
a
other
rumor.
Micers?
Yeah, some females.
Nasty bunch. Yes. What was the rumor?
That I had sex with the fucking booker of Montreal to get into Montreal. And I got it. Like, do you remember when I was opening for you? Do you remember when I was like, I would never have sex with anyone that could help me?
Yeah.
And you were like, I can't help it. You were kidding. But
yeah.
You're like, I'm sorry I said that. It was hilarious. But it was like
a softball.
But it was just like I never, I was so paranoid that to get, I never wanted to get something I didn't earn or anything like that. And it's so hilarious because I'm like, if you guys knew the powerful dicks I fucking dodged, I mean, I could have a fucking, probably a lot more success right now or less. I don't know.
I just don't, I don't know who starts that shit.
It's just, it's crazy and it's such a weird week.
Do you know who started it?
I have suspicions. And
I guess it doesn't matter because it's always going to be something.
And it doesn't matter. But what the lesson for me to learn was like, I was living very fearful that people were going to say these things about me. And the truth is people are going to say things about me no matter what. Like,
so in terms of you and Kurt, you know,
so we were working in the, so, Kurt had my back and he told me to take the pig knuckles off. And he was like,
that seems like a big thing, the pig knuckles.
Yeah, it was. It was like, it was really nice of him to do that. And it was really helpful because I did. I like, look, I'm wearing this fucking thing around my neck that's like keeping me in this place of being rotten. And like, these things are all my fault.
Shame.
Yeah. So he did that and he was, and then he promised, he's like, I just want to let you know, I will never betray our friendship. I will never like hit on you or whatever. So I really believed him. So we're working in the room together. We're just having so much fun. And when I used to live there, we would just spend all night laughing and writing jokes and like wake up at 4 p.m. the next day and go do shows with like brand new jokes. It was just like, so every boyfriend I've had other than him since I did comedy made me feel like they're taking from my time in comedy.
Yeah.
And he just, I always say like Kurt's like salt. Like he just enhances everything. Like he just makes like my life just better. I'm going to cry. I love him so much, but fuck, I love him. He's just so sweet. And then you find someone that like understands you and like can protect you. And it's like, I just didn't have anyone protecting me ever. And to finally have this like person that just like, he just gets it and he can tell me things about myself that I couldn't see. Like, I thought I was ugly and shit. So I'm like, I thought I was like, looked like a boy and shit. I'm like running around flashing my boobs thinking it's funny because I'm like this hideous monster. And it's like, no wonder these girls fucking hated me. I'm like, well, I don't want to say I'm pretty, but you know what I mean? Like, but it's like, I'm not, I don't look like a boy. Like, I just didn't know, my self-worth was so like, I just didn't know what I was or what people saw me as.
Yeah.
And so it was just so nice to have someone that just knows me so well. And like, yeah, he's just helped me so much. Like, I feel like I've gone through so much of my shit. Like, just to have someone who loves
you.
How you
saw
just, like,
yourself.
Yeah. Just someone who just has your back and can like, just like gets you. It's just incredible.
Well, that's great. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel really good.
When I heard it, I was like, wow, well, it made sense to me, but I didn't know the whole history. You know,
well, they called me Girl Kurt for a year. Like, you know?
And did you, like, in what, so you feel like that this has helped you process the distrust and the trauma and your self-image?
Yeah, it was such a weird, I never had the experience of, I don't know if this is just like, I just wasn't in love when I thought I was in love before, but I just had this experience of when it really like, when I really saw him and stuff and was able to like feel what he was saying to me, I just, it felt like my chest was like on fire. Like if I think about him sometimes still, I like feel, it's like I'm burnt. Like it's like, I like burning. Like it just like, I was just so starved for.
Well, yeah, because when you just sort of do what you were saying before is like, date people that you can, you know, and you can manage it.
Yeah,
there's no trust really, but there's no threat either.
Yeah,
and it's just like, what is that?
Yeah, it's just a weird waste of time, and it was just, I would get upset with myself, and then I'd be like, and then I'm completely disrespect these people I'm with.
But also, don't you think that like you don't believe you're lovable or can love?
Yeah, there's that rotten thing. Like, I really, like, at the core, thought I was rotten. And it was interesting because I used to go back to my high school. I didn't, like, realize the trauma. I mean, it was such denial on so many levels. And I would go back to my high school to visit all the time. And up until, like, 4 years ago, when my best friend, who was also a victim of molestation and assault and stuff like that, and she was like, stop, like, fuck these people. Because I was like, they made me feel terrible. I would go in. I remember the year after it happened, I went in to go to the graduation ceremony.
Yeah.
And I popped my head in to see the art teacher that had helped me. who I'd gone to, and I lean my head in, and he goes, "Get out. This is for current graduates," and screamed at me. And I remember like being like in such shock because I was going back to be like,
Hey,
like,
thank you.
Like, I'm, you know, not thank you, but I think I was just trying to get approval from them because I was just really left alone in that situation. And
that hurts.
And so I go back. He said that. I remember just like crumbling in the hallway, and the janitor walked by, this guy Frank, and he went, "I saw that." He's like, "I just want you to know," he's called me Blondie, but not in like a jerk off on your leg sort of way. He was very nice. He goes, he's like, "Blondie, I just want to let you know, like, I saw what just happened there. I saw the way they treated you. They did you real dirty. I just want you to know I know that someone saw it." And I was like, "Oh, thank God." So then I'm always like, "Did I make him up? Is he imaginary?" But then I got a message from one of my teachers the other day where she was like, well, I don't know. Maybe I'll read it. I haven't responded to her yet, but I will. It's just so much, you know?
The other day?
Yeah. She goes, blah, 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 blah. She goes, "There's so much more I want to say to you.
Yeah.
Mostly that I'm sorry. You went through a lot. Damn. And I don't give you, I don't think I gave you everything you needed. I tried, but that's not good enough. I know that if you were my advisee today, I would have had much more to offer. I love what a badass you are and always have been. I loved you dearly when you were mine." She was talking about when I was her advisee. "And I hope you felt that."
That's nice.
Yeah, it's nice. Like, I'm like trying to work on forgiving and stuff, but.
Who are you working with? What are you doing to help you through this stuff?
Well, I'm just like kind of, I'm not in therapy right now, but I, you know, want to be. It's just me and DMT. Just kidding. I haven't done DMT in a little while, but I don't know. Right now, I'm kind of on like a scavenger hunt, I guess.
Well, you feel like you have the support. You're in a relationship that's
like really
opening
like,
you up, and maybe you're a little more able to process this stuff.
Yeah, I feel protected, but also I feel very strong, and I can look back on all the situations and know that I really did fight for myself.
Definitely. But when you think of these gaps, I mean, what is it that you need to know now?
I just like, how did this happen? Like, to me, it's just like, how, like, I'm just so curious about like his lawyer. Like, how can you like, I guess it's me seeking approval still. Cause it's like, how could you like just label me as like fucking bad or something? Or like, it's just so like.
That guy.
It was just like all, like, it just felt like everyone, it was just so hard. Like, why is my fucking softball coach or the girl from my softball team, I can't remember if he was the coach or not, but like, I just don't, there are things I didn't ask then. Like, I ask questions now, and I'm not afraid of hearing answers or.
Right. So a lot of it is around, you know, what happened, but also why did they demonize you? And then why did everybody believe them?
Right. And it's not that like, it just felt like people were like, other people around me were being protected from me. I just am curious. I also am curious about, because I was trying to Google like the details of the trial and it's just not anywhere. I'm just curious about, I want to remember what happened.
Well, it's fortunate and good that, you know, that so much good stuff is happening in your life, career-wise.
I'm real happy,
And, you know, emotionally that, you know, maybe while your heart's open, you could figure that out.
Yeah.
Not for any reason other than it will give you relief.
Right. Yeah, I mean, no, for sure.
No one deserves a break in the story necessarily.
No, it's no, like, breaks or anything, but it's like, you know, for myself, it was just like, it all kind of came to a head after the election. It was just jarring. It was jarring. I just was like so not expecting that. And then, you know, I went to the women's market and I just saw like all these like crying. Like, I was like, oh my God, we're like in some fucking, we're like, there's
in
a lot
trouble.
Of like traumatized.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so relieved like to be dealing with all this shit. Feels so like, it's hard, but it's like, thank God I can move on. I can start remembering things. I can read a book.
Yeah.
I can like try to like learn and stuff now.
And you don't have to be so fucking defensive all the time.
Yeah, I don't have to be all goddamn defensive. Well, sometimes I do.
No,
but
you know what I mean. No,
yeah, no, I know. I was just being defensive for fun.
I got it.
Okay.
Yeah, you can feel strong enough to let the better side of yourself out.
Yeah. I always think about, my twin brother said to me, he's got a wife and two daughters. At the time, he only had one daughter. We were on vacation.
Yeah.
And his wife's an atheist. And I go, aren't you an atheist? He goes, He's like, are you kidding me? He's like, have you seen my wife and daughter? Like, of course I believe in God. And I kind of feel that way about my life right now, where it's like, not like God's hanging, like, you know, like this Catholic dude or whatever. But like, I feel like that, like there's got to be something that got me to this shit that's like where I just feel like I'm supposed to be, you know?
Yeah, I think maybe I should look at it like that.
Yeah, it's not like
for you.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, yes. But just like God's like the word, but not.
No, I know. Yeah, like, you know, like there is something about hanging in and about fighting the fight that, you know, eventually, you know, like I think a lot of the stuff that's happened, even culturally, like if what had happened in the election or what had happened with the women's movement did not happen, Kurt didn't happen, who the fuck knows?
Yeah. You know, yeah, for sure. I mean, I had to be like triggered into the process. And I like, you know, it's funny. I did acid. I was going to tell you, I did acid with my friend up in the Burbank Hills in her like beautiful house. And there was a bear loose that day.
Yeah.
And I ran into the bear. Like, I saw the bear before we took acid. I saw, I was crossing the street. I was going to yoga. And I make eye contact with the bear. My friend's husband's been searching for the bear all morning. So I'm, like, going down the hill. I make eye contact with the bear. I call my friend. I'm like, dude, get Pete out here. I found the fucking bear. And she goes, I just took acid. And I'm like, oh, my God. All right, well, I'm coming back. I guess you couldn't wait for me to fucking yoga. So then I'm like, I saw the bear. I got to do the acid.
Yeah.
So then I turn. I go back. And we like, take this fucking amazing acid my friend made in Santa Fe. And I just had this amazing experience, and everything was bear related because of this.
Yeah.
So the bears, there's helicopters going around searching for the bear. Everyone's, there's animal controls going up and down trying to find the bear. And then we're sitting out in their like hot tub in their porch, just like everything's beautiful. And I just went like, holy shit. This whole time I thought I was a piece of shit, and I've been a fucking pot of honey this whole time. Holy. So now I'm just like, if I put myself in as a pot of honey, and I look back at everything, I go, yeah, I was a pot of honey. The whole fucking time I was so mad at myself. And I'm like, no, I was just a pot of honey.
That's great.
Yeah, I feel good.
I think that's a good metaphor.
Yeah.
Thanks, Annie.
Thanks, man.
That was me and Annie Letterman on Thanksgiving. Was that appropriate for Thanksgiving? I hope so. Did you take a nice long walk? Did it help out? Boomer lives!